So we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 14, chapter entitled Lord Krishna Explains the Yoga System, text number 17. Please repeat after me. Nishkinchana Mai Anurakta Chetasha Shanta Mahanta Akhila Jiva Vatsala Kame. Analabdha, Dhiya, Jushanti, Te, Yai, Nairapeksham, Navidu, Sukham, Mama, Nishkinchanamai Yunarakta Chetasa, Shanta Mahanto Kula Jiva Vatsala Kamer Analabdha Diyo Jushantite Yanairapeksham Navidu Sukham Mama Nishkinchanamai Anurakta Chetasa Shanta Mahanto Khila Jiva Vatsala Kamer Anala Vadiyo Jushantite Yanairapeksham Navidu Sukham Mama Nishkinchanamai Anurakta Chetasa Shanta Mahanto Khila Jiva Vatsala Kamer Analab Dadiyo Jushantite Yanairapeksham Navidu Sukham Mama. Nishkinchanamai Anurakta Chetasa Shanta Mahanto Khila Jiva Vatsala Kamer Analabdha Diyo Jushantite Yanairapeksham Navidu Shanta Mahanto Khila Jiva Vatsala Kamer Analabdha Diyo Jushantite Yanairapeksham Navidu Sukham Mama. Matajis. Nishkinchana, without any desire for sense gratification. Mai, in me, the Supreme Lord. Anurakta Chetasa, mind constantly attached, Shanta, peaceful, Mahanta, great souls without false ego, Akhila, to all, Jiva, living entities, Vatsala, affectionate well-wishers, Kamai, by opportunities for sense gratification, Analabdha, untouched and unaffected, Dhiya, whose consciousness, Jushanti, experience, De, Yat, which, Nairapekshyam, achieved only by complete detachment. Na vidu, they do not know. Sukham, happiness. Mama, my. Translation and purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. Those who are without any desire for personal gratification, whose minds are always attached to me, who are peaceful, without false ego, and merciful to all living entities, and whose consciousness is never affected by opportunities for sense gratification, such persons enjoy in me a happiness that cannot be known or achieved by those lacking such detachment from the material world. Purport. The pure devotees always experience transcendental bliss in their service to Sri Krishna, the reservoir of pleasure. Thus, they are completely detached from material pleasure and do not desire even liberation. Since all others have some personal desire, they cannot experience such happiness. Pure devotees always desire to give Krishna conscious happiness to all others, and therefore they are called Mahanta, or great souls. In the course of a devotee's service, many opportunities for sense gratification arise, but a pure devotee is not tempted or attracted and does not fall down from his exalted transcendental position. Om Ajnantimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namah Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Ruta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamsha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamsa He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Taptakanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Panchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripasindhuva Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So, in this verse, the central theme in this very beautiful verse is this resting on desire. What is, each one has a desire, and that desire is internal. So really, if you look at 10 people standing in front of us, we wouldn't have an idea. And supposing you were to rate someone that, okay, who's a pure devotee, who's a advanced devotee, who's is not a believer in God, you just cannot make out at all, because the desires are what drive the consciousness. What we feel, what we want to do, how we want to react to the events that happen in our life is based on desire. So the desire will drive the consciousness, and that consciousness is really whether it is Krishna consciousness or it is Maya consciousness. Both are coming from, Maya is also part of Krishna. It is an energy of the Lord, but the inferior energy. So ultimately the question is about desire, and there is a very beautiful and powerful statement in the verse which I'd like to highlight and keep in our minds. When the description is about the pure devotees, those who are without any desire for personal gratification, whose minds are always attached to me, peaceful, without false ego, merciful to all living entities, whose consciousness, and this point, whose consciousness is never affected by opportunities for sense gratification. Whose consciousness is never affected by opportunities for sense gratification. I think this applies very much to us also, because sense gratification comes in many forms, it's all around us. And Krishna very directly says, who is most dear to him, who will live without fear, who will come back to him, whom he will protect. It rests on this, that somebody who is completely surrendered to the Lord, and whose consciousness is, means who, there will be choices given, but the person who chooses the right choice. So this is, and in a sense, this is the whole life that we, if we have to encapsulate what we do in our entire life, it is from birth to death, a struggling devotee is trying to understand starting with who am I, what is my purpose of my life, how do I react to events that are happening around me, how do I reconcile my I understand some, there is, the temple activity, spiritual life, how do I reconcile with my life? This is a process. In this process, this constant challenge that is coming is, every time, every moment, we have choices to make. And here is very beautifully explained, how do we take the right choice? Where do we exercise that? And it is not like, we have to take a decision after 2 weeks or after certain time. In most cases, we are actually taking decisions constantly. In a few cases, we may have to, we may have the chance or the opportunity to deliberate, take advice. But many times we are on our own, we have to react constantly. And that is why it is impossible to have a textbook approach. It is not an external thing, it is not a mental exercise, it is not a matter of skill. It's a matter of values, and that values are driven by our consciousness. That consciousness is driven by our desire. So what we think and what we want to do has to be ingrained in us. Because that's then we spontaneously say, I want to do this, I want to do that, this is right, this is wrong, I cannot do this, I should do this. This can only come if it is completely ingrained to us. And actually, leave aside Krishna consciousness. Anything that we do, like for instance, if we are desperate for, like Monday to Friday is a very tough time, and raising children, or the workload is huge, or there's so much tension in my work environment, so much bitterness, fighting. I mean, this is a regular battle. Most people go through it regularly. And then we are looking forward to, okay, when is I get a time off and then I go to do this or that. You just want to escape. So then that excitement that is based on our desire, because we are looking forward to seeing how we could can get away from what we are doing and then back to what we are in Monday. So there also we have exercised the choice. So the choices are there, we are already doing it, but there we are only driven by getting away from something. And then that's, ultimately it's just a matter of material energy. So whether we are, our consciousness is going to be completely stooped in material things, and without the absence of Krishna, or without the absence of means Krishna, which means without accepting His presence in everything that we do, we would not be able to progress. And the description in the verse today is, it's exactly what, how somebody can be completely living a peaceful, somebody who's most dear to Krishna. Someone who's peaceful, someone who's not envious, someone who's can control the senses, makes the right choices, etc. So that is really our, if you have to say what is Krishna consciousness, it is this, that how do I make the right choices, how do I keep Krishna in the center. So if you were to take perhaps a perfect example, it's of Lord Brahma. And why? Because Lord Brahma is really, I mean, he's the creator. Everything that we see around us, you know, everything that we do in the entire universe has come from him. So he's a secondary creator, but he's the, I mean, and he, after in the Krishna, in the Krishna Leela, when he, at momentarily, Lord Brahma forgets his position and he thinks he's pulled a fast one on Krishna when he's actually taken all the cows and the calves and the children and locked them up in a cave. But Krishna outsmarts him by recreating, by actually coming into the children and the calves. And in fact, the mothers of the cows and the mothers, they feel even greater warmth towards the new children and the new calves. So Brahma sees how he is outsmarted and then he completely, but to his credit, he is completely humbled. And this is a lesson to us that the greatest creator, the person who has all the controls, I mean, he has, lives for trillions of years, and he is a direct agent of Krishna for creation, the direct link. Even he can get off the track momentarily if he leaves. But then Krishna, Brahma teaches us how he comes back. So here we see that when he comes back, when he humbles himself, and then he has very beautiful prayers, but in that there's a very nice example he gives. He compares himself to a firefly. You know, a firefly is a small insect which has a Krishna-given ability to, in the dark, to glow, to shed some light. Now, just compare a small insect which has that propensity to give light, and how does it compare to the sun? Now, so Brahma puts himself as a firefly when he humbles himself. So, I wanted to bring this to see that if Brahma feels he's a firefly in presence of the sun, because when the sun comes, there are zillions and trillions of fireflies also cannot compare to the light that comes from the sun. Just one sun. So, and if he feels that, and Brahma is the creator of everything, living trillions of years, direct agent of Krishna, then what is our position in vis-a-vis Krishna? So, an intelligent person will first understand, and that is the process of the Vaishnava philosophy, Krishna conscious philosophy, to first know what is our position, what is Krishna's position. Because that is the starting point. I mean, if we understand who Krishna is, then all those talks that we hear, you know, the misleading talks that Krishna says, people differently interpret Bhagavad Gita, will think that Krishna did not mean this, did not mean that. Actually, when we see, first of all, that Krishna has, through the philosophy, clearly shown his own position. And it is for our guidance, so that we come back to him. So that's the first thing. So when we see our position versus Lord Brahma, and Lord Brahma's position in Krishna, we understand Krishna's all-encompassing, you know, what is his control. So when he says he's sarva karana karanam, that means when Krishna says that I am the cause of all causes, So it means that there is no, everything happens with a cause. So we often use the word accident. Accidentally this happened, by chance, accident. We keep on saying this many times for many things. Perhaps according to our own understanding or our own interactions, according to our plans, it may be that something unexpected happened. But actually Krishna, everything happens according to Krishna's will. So understanding Krishna's position is one, but also knowing that everything happens by Krishna's arrangement is the key to becoming peaceful and to really focus on Krishna consciousness. Because otherwise, till the time we don't accept Krishna is doing everything, we will still think that when things don't go well, we get so much consumed mentally. It's one thing to, we have to do everything we can. If there's an emergency, we have to put. But we are talking about the consciousness. And the consciousness is where it doesn't fit in with Krishna. Then we will be looking at it in a completely material way, bypassing him totally or eliminating his presence. And if things go very well, then also we are so consumed that actually we go far away from Krishna, because we then suddenly get the feeling that I don't need him because I am seeing what is happening to me. So therefore, this is a key part to understand that, on a higher level we can see that Krishna, he is in control of everything. There is no accident. There is no, what happens to us, what happens around us by so-called chance, etc. I mean, it is planned, and then we see things unraveling according to the karmic laws of karma. So as we meet people whom we bump into someone, or we develop relationship with someone, but that's because we may have had relation in the past, and we are living our life according to karma. So whatever happens to us, good or bad, we'll have to suffer for that, because we have to consume our karmic reactions of the past. So devotee understands that everything is orchestrated by Krishna. Orchestrated means, if you've seen an orchestra, which is more a Western concept, but in Western music they have this, classical Western music, there's one person, one conductor, and then there are maybe 50 musicians. One plays, two, three people play the violins, and the various, every instrument is being played. So while they're focusing on the musical piece, but the conductor, if you see, he's doing nothing. He doesn't have any instrument, he just has a baton. But then there is a musical sign. So when he is actually conducting, they understand what he wants. But everything is happening according to his, the crescendo, how the different instruments play, etc., is all guided by his actions. Similarly, a ringmaster, if you say, go to a circus and then there is a lion. So, the person is actually conducting everything, and then all the various animals around him are moving. So that's the position of Krishna. That Krishna is orchestrating everything, but on a much, much higher level. And therefore, what we say, ultimately, this is good, this is bad. Ultimately, for a devotee, he understands it is for my good. We may not know how, we may not know why, but ultimately, so therefore, when he puts us in a position which may look, detrimental for us, which is not, which is affecting us adversely, it may appear that way, and we may be suffering. But actually, if we have faith in Krishna, and then we will understand over time that actually nothing is detrimental, everything is a perfect opportunity for spiritual advancement. And that is the purpose of a philosophy. The philosophy is not just to tell us dry, points about Krishna is this, Krishna is this. They're giving so much rich stories, very beautiful stories for all ages. And these stories are not mythological, the stories are real. We see the sufferings of devotees, we see how they react. They've happened in various yugas, so we're talking of, over trillions of years. And each of them, all these great personalities, how they've reacted to it. And some who have been affected because of not reacting well. So we have everything, like for instance Indra. He's also a great devotee, but he's a mixed devotee. So he gets affected, but he also has enormous powers. Then we have Prahlad Maharaj. So many stories we have around us are all meant to tell us that, and their situations are much, much millions of times worse than our situations. It's okay, we don't really get into that story like advanced devotees do, so we do not really live and feel like that. We just read it as a story. But if you actually try to think for a moment, if you were living that, it would be intolerable. You know, the situations they're put in are inconceivable. So sometimes we may think that, okay, it's like a story. So some things are there, some things are not there. Who knows whether it happened or not. If you look at it that way, if you don't have faith, then we will not achieve this kind of fearlessness and any spiritual advancement, because we'll be doubting Krishna himself. This is for the devotees, but for those who do not believe, for those who are materialists, or those who do believe nominally, but still their main concern is materialism, where that is their main passion, that is their main goal in life. Then Krishna is also present, though they may not see, but then it is under the direction of the laws of karma. So all the actions and the reactions of material nature are constantly coming upon them, inescapable. We may not, just because we do not see Krishna or believe in Krishna, we do not accept that, doesn't mean that we are not going to suffer. We will be anyway suffering. So the suffering is there, but a devotee, through the eyes of knowledge and through the guidance from Guru and Sadhu and the Shastra, would actually know how to, not only would be able to tolerate it better because he understands why is it happening, but also knowing, he knows fully well that that is the past. But my present actions will determine my future. So how I react to events is really my control. A wise man will see that, okay, there are a lot of problems, but he will concentrate on what can I control. 99% things in the world you can't control. You are growing older, you are aging, your health, so many things react. The traffic, the noise, so many things are not in your control. But what is in our control is our consciousness. So if issues that happen to us, how we react to it in the wisest possible way. And it does not mean that we inaction. People generally think that we have to, like Arjun is the perfect example. That is why Bhagavad Gita was spoken at Kurukshetra, that Arjun's reaction was he had to be in war and Krishna had to tell him. But it, consciousness was he was fighting for the right purpose. It was not out of vengeance. It was not out of cruelty. It was not out of an ego that I have to establish. Absolutely. He was only under the guidance of Krishna, but he did it. So externally, someone may say there's no difference between Duryodhan and Krishna, Arjun. But internally, we know that the consciousness, one was trying to protect humanity, the other one was trying to destroy humanity. So these actions and reactions will happen because Krishna himself has created the laws of karma. These laws have come by Krishna himself. So we have to know that because it's come from Krishna, whoever we are, in whatever species, this 8.4 million species of life, every living entity, for every moment, every second, that nothing is happening by chance. For each and everything, those who have gone to the lower species also, everything is in control by Krishna. So the only difference is that devotee puts himself, so you may say, what is the difference between a materialist and a devotee? Because both are affected by events, so many things are happening, they are suffering. The difference is that the devotee puts himself under the daivish prakriti, this is a spiritual energy. And the materialists or the karmis will then put themselves, or the people who are not believing Krishna or nominally believing in the Lord, in the power of God, will be putting themselves under the maya shakti, that is the material energy. So both the energies is Krishna, they belong to Krishna. But the inferior energy, the maya energy, Krishna allows that to, maya is under the direction of Krishna. So we may say that this person is affecting me, this person is doing this, he's going to, actually Krishna is in his or her heart also. But that person will react according to his or her consciousness and his or her karma. His situation is according to his or her karma. But how we control and how we react is, so we have to sometimes defend, we have to sometimes be aggressive, but it has to be a control thing. It cannot be a completely uncontrolled thing. All the time it has to be knowing that we are under the guidance of Krishna and nothing is happening by chance. So these mental concoctions, you know, that I could do this, I can do that, I can control this, etc., only emanate from not believing that Krishna is controlling. So the minute we submissively accept Krishna's will, immediately then Krishna takes over and he guides us and protects us. So this is a person who constantly does this is called a Mahatma. So there is a, here in the purport, pure devotees always desire to give Krishna conscious happiness to all others. To all others, and therefore they are called Mahatma or great souls. So a Mahatma is not someone who is a brilliant speaker. Mahatma is not someone who is a great pujari. Mahatma is not necessarily someone who is a sannyasi. Mahatma is not necessarily a guru also. Maybe, maybe not. He doesn't have to be though. A Mahatma is someone who is willingly putting himself under the directions of Daivi Prakriti, of the spiritual energy. Which means he's accepting totally Krishna's will and he's very happily and submissively following that. That is the key thing. Then he may incidentally be a sannyasi, he may incidentally be a guru, or he may be a pujari, or he may be whatever service he's doing. But the key aspect is what is his consciousness, activity, and he puts himself, and if, when he does that, Krishna fully protects. That is why we see in Prahlad Maharaj's story, that how he completely, at that age, 5 years old, when he was being thrown off the mountain, he had no fear. Completely fearless. He was smiling because he didn't mind, because he, whatever would happen, he had complete faith in the Lord. Whatever was happening, he went through enormous pain because his father was the most powerful man in the entire universe. And in spite of that, he was completely fearless because he had that understanding. Amrish Maharaj is also someone who, great king who was harassed by a very powerful mystic, Durvasa Muni, who had tremendous siddhis and could be very intimidating and very fearful. And Amrish Maharaj, and also he was humiliated because he was the king of the universe and he was like made to not only, he was threatened and he was cursed and he was, there was an attempt to kill him, but he did not react in any way. He just prayed and he waited for a whole year till Durvasa Muni's circular movements everywhere, escaping the anger of Lord Vishnu, finally he comes and then Amrish Maharaj surrenders. So you can see that in the most provocative situations, Amrish Maharaj demonstrated the ideal behavior. Another example is of Gajendra. Gajendra was the king of the elephants. And these are, you know, if you can say, we may not be kings, but we can identify, because Gajendra was also, he was an elephant, but you know, he was blessed with, he was a very great devotee. And he had tens of thousands of elephants under him, very powerful. He was highly intelligent. He was also undefeated, very, very powerful. So when he was in the river, which is not his strength, he had gone to the river and the crocodile catches him. And then they fight for thousands of years. If he was on land, nobody could have defeated Gajendra. But because he was in the waters, the crocodile was, that is the domain of the crocodile. It became weaker and weaker. He was dragged. And for thousands of years, the battle was going on. And everyone was watching. His family, his children, tens of thousands of people were on the banks, but they couldn't do anything. And then Gajendra, he went through so many emotions. Because he first thought he could do it himself, he fought. And then he could see he was feeling helpless because as time went by, the crocodile was growing in strength and he was becoming weaker and weaker. He could also see nobody could help him. So he appealed for help, but then he saw so many are there, but they couldn't do anything. And finally when Krishna gives him the remembrance, so he takes the lotus flower in his trunk and he prays to the Lord, very beautiful prayers, appealing to the Lord. And not just asking for help, not pleading that, oh, please help me. No. He just gratefully, you know, brings his all his consciousness into acknowledging Lord Vishnu's position and being so expressing gratitude in that situation. And then Lord Vishnu comes, and his Garuji comes, Garuji and Gajendra saved. So these are instances where we are saying this in 2 minutes. But if we say that for thousands of years he went through that, Amrish Maharaj went through an entire year where Durvasmani, and he did not break his fast. He waited till Durvasmani came back. He could have eaten because it was things were not in his hands. So it was a long duration. So when we go through distress, we think that, well, you know, we hear a story and it's over in 20 seconds or 1 minute. But we have to see how, what was happening that time. The Mahabharata. How many, 12 years they were in the wilderness. But before that, right from childhood practically, they were being harassed constantly. Queen Kunti, for instance, you know, look at her position. Such a powerful, I mean, she was the mother of the king of the universe. Eventually she did become, but not that she was craving for it. But such a person was gone through not even practically a moment of happiness. Even when they were in the jungles and her husband was cursed, and then Pandu died early, and she was left with 5 children, and people whom she respected could not protect her. So, and then one thing after the other, there was constant threats, etc. It went on for such a long period, but did not give up the slightest faith. Not the slightest. Every moment was, they were just feeling that we are protected only because Krishna is with us. That was, and therefore when the war was to start, when Krishna gave a choice to Arjuna and Duryodhan, I'll be on one side, but without any arms. So they went for that. They did not accept the army, because if you see the material energy, the whole Yadav army was so powerful. It could have easily bewildered anyone to say that, wow, I can count, you know, then now I can, how many millions of elephants and horses and infantry and all is there. Let me take all these. That's much more valuable. But the consciousness was not on that. Krishna, the central person in everyone's life. If he is with me, whatever happens, I am with him. This kind of faith comes through hearing the stories of people who have faith. Faith begets faith, as they say. So if somebody who has such faith, that is why association is powerful. When we are associating devotees, never mind if in this room or in the temple, we don't find everyone with that strong faith. That doesn't matter. But people, even if they're having some faith, but they're continuously struggling and coming to the Lord and following a process, then it certainly rubs out on us. We'll also do that. So Queen Kunti, how Krishna manifests this, you know, in her prayers, which come actually at the fag end of the war is over, and then Krishna is going back to Dwarka. I mean, one would say that that is the pinnacle of happiness, the highest happiness. There is nothing more to achieve. All, you know, as they say, and they lived happily ever after, right? Okay, all now they're going to utopian, perfect world. So many miseries, everything is over, and now only happiness. My son is the emperor, and all. And she's very sad. She's crying, and what she says, it's unbelievable to read this. But coming from her, it just shows exactly what her consciousness is. In her prayer, she says, "Let the calamities happen again and again." Because only if those calamities happen, I will remember you, Krishna. So let my mind flow to you as the rivers flow towards the sea. So she is pleading that please don't go. She is saying it's the most miserable time because you are going away. So this value of being the mother of the universe and you know, having so much was of inconsequence. A key part was that Krishna is not with me. Krishna was a nephew, but she never looked at it like an aunt looking at a nephew. She saw that Krishna is the Supreme Personality, and her desire was only this, that I don't mind the calamities. That means let the calamities come, because, and that is what happens to us. We also, many of us come to, most people come to Krishna because when they have challenges. So actually that's Krishna's mercy. So when things are being difficult, we should think of Queen Kunti. When she says, let the calamities happen, she's embracing, she's welcoming it, saying that let the calamities happen again and again. Because when they happen, then I will remember you. I will not forget you. So, we are not at that level as at her, but we can see in that direction that we may have also our own challenges, we should not lose faith. It gives us courage. That gives us the opportunity to take the right decisions. So basically what we, go to that level, we have to, if we take Srila Prabhupada's case, we have, Krishna's blessed us by having a movement like ISKCON. How did we come to Krishna consciousness? So how we came to Srila Prabhupada's movement, I mean, it's inexplicable. So we should just grab it and say that, wow, this is something which has happened to me. I never expected, desired, deserved. I mean, I don't deserve it, but I just got it. So, and then we study his life, and then we see that how he has reacted. Just like all these great Mahatmas of the past, every great soul has gone through that. I mean, his challenges were also incredible to understand, but how he reacted to every event, right from the beginning, after he came to Krishna, to his guru, and then first he went to Allahabad and started the center within a year or so. All that he had started was taken away by some politics, and the governor's wife came and took away everything. But he never gave up hope. Again he started. Then he went to... that was in Jhansi, sorry. Jhansi. And then his business collapsed. I mean, he was completely... you can say materially he was impoverished. He never gave up. You know, he was... Because his goal was very clear. And he understood also that these are passing things. Externally, life is temporary. He got heart attacks on the Jaladuta when he was going abroad, when he was going to America. So that did not stop him also. So these kind of Maya's provocations, or Krishna's allowing the test to come, just so that all of us can see that unwavering determination, how it can help. Then when he goes there also for a year, he's just, in his own words, says he was just wandering and loitering the streets of New York till people started coming to him. He was living with the most degraded kind of people that time. A drug addict tried to kill him. He had to run down four floors. At that age, he goes running. Things get stolen. Then he starts building the society. And just a year or two before he... When he was having a lot of success, and suddenly tens of thousands of people were coming to him, and then Maya brings another attack, the brainwashing case. There was a huge case in America, and a whole industry started. This industry was based on going, they claimed that these children, these young children, 17, 18, 19 year olds, they have been taken away by this mystic people, and they're brainwashed by forcing them to say a mantra. You keep saying the mantra, and then they get as if they are being possessed by something. This was the case. So this industry was actually, they had these they felt that ISKCON was a cult, and like other religious institutions, they called them cults. And there was an anti-cult movement where people, parents adopted, I mean employed and involved thugs and, literally, and enforcement people, police people to come and kidnap their own children, lock them up. Many, many children went through this. I mean, many boys and girls went through that. And then they kept locked, and then the counselors, they brainwashed them, saying that, we have tried to save you, we can't believe it, but we are here in India, Krishna is everywhere, saying the mantra of Krishna is, there's nothing, everyone believes in that, or Ram, or whichever God we believe in. But that was the kind of situation, and it was a big, huge legal case. And you can imagine Prabhupada's situation, when he is now battling to save his own institution. And then finally, and Prabhupada said, bring all the books that I've written, all the Shastra, tell them this is a bona fide religion. This is, you may not know in America, you've never gone to India, you don't know, but in India there are hundreds of millions of people who believe. They believe in demigods, God, they believe in so many, this is a normal ritual to chant the name of the Lord, and all religions also do it. And this battle went on, and amazingly the judge gave a very strong verdict. He said, this is completely bogus, this country. They said, Hare Krishna movement is a bona fide religion, And it is a genuine religion which is actually helping people. So, and this effort is bogus. It should not be done. It should be stopped, this kind of catching people and all that. So, it is not a brainwashing thing. But it can imagine the what he must have gone through. But he had full faith. That Krishna, I didn't have anything. Krishna, I am a puppet. Krishna made me go to the U.S. He made me start this movement. I mean, people, he kept saying that you all have been, when it, all his devotees kept coming, he never saw that he's created anything. He said, you are all sent by my Guru Maharaj. You have all come to me to help me in my mission to try to spread Krishna consciousness. This was his moment-to-moment consciousness right through. That is the perfect example for us to follow because it was in our lifetime. He was here 40 years ago. So, if we can see that, and we are not going to get even a fraction of the kind of challenges he has faced, because it was on a different scale only. We can't even imagine the scale. You know, he was traveling 13 times around the world in 12 years at that age, because he was laying the seeds everywhere. And the kind of challenges were there, the kind of opportunity he got, people came, but that's how, why the 800 centers and... So, in this, at that brainwashing time, when he could see that my whole movement could collapse, I mean, it was Krishna's, it was in Krishna's hands. He has started it. He did not lose any sleep. That whatever Krishna does is best. And then Krishna, people found it difficult to believe it. I mean, the judge went through all the arguments and then he said it is completely bona fide. So, and then the Jew land also, his own disciples made some serious mistakes. You know, they actually signed the land away after they had such a strong case and they by mistake weakened the case. And Prabhupada was so disheartened at that time initially. But he never lost hope. And then somehow it was almost magical how things changed. You know, that the owner died and the wife then finally gave in and so on. So other innumerable challenges. So we for us, as per the verse, if we want to see how we how we want to move to a stage where we can be peaceful and live in Krishna consciousness, it cannot come without facing the challenges. But how we face the challenges and what actions we take, you know, what steps we take, how we react to events will guide us and as we absorb the examples of these many, many examples that are there right through our through the acharyas, through our guru, through the philosophy, if to the extent that we embrace their life and we desire to follow that, then to that extent our desires will move towards becoming a more God-conscious. And through that, we will be gradually coming to a stage when we can see, like if Prahlad Maharaj, when he was facing imminent death, he had no issue, I mean, no fear. And we will come to a stage if we really sincerely follow that stage. And then we'll be able to see what things, what are not in our control, what is in our control. And what is not in our control, we just don't lose much sleep over. What is in our control, which is particularly our actions, we do the best we can to purify that. So we'll stop here. And, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Prabhupada ki jai, Radha Gopinath ki jai.